on 1116 SEN. We're first at the footy every Sunday morning.
From a tactical point of view, it was very smart, and he had very experienced players against two very inexperienced boys.
With full-on footy analysis.
Consistency and all that is fantastic, but at some time during your game, you have to stand up as a coach and say, I'm going to make this move. I'm going to change the course of the game from my position as a coach.
Welcome to Inside Football with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merholm, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555.
Good morning and another dazzling morning in Melbourne Town. Football fans, we welcome you to a big day on 1116 SEN, your home of football. And for 2 hours before we start our live football coverage, it's your home of Inside Football, the full-on look at footy with Robert Shaw and myself, Mark Fine, where we contend with matters that occurred yesterday inside the Oval. We saw so much good football yesterday. As I welcome Robert Shaw, who, as soon as I saw him, he had a big wide grin on his face, and that means I know that he's seen football that he approves of. How are you, Robert?
G'day, Mark, and good morning, listeners. Yeah, look, fantastic game last night. I know we've got to do other games. We'll focus on the Saturday night game. But that had everything, Mark. It had a real edge to it at time, a very physical edge. The tackling of both sides was superb. The tactical battle, which we'll go through, was fantastic, culminating in the, whether it was a desperation move or not, but moving McVay forward, got those last two goals. The focus on a superb game by Rioli and Mitchell to lift Hawthorn. It had everything. It was nasty. It was tough. And at the end, they do what they should have done. They shook hands and walked off the ground. And I think, you know, the focus on Hawthorn 4-4. It's not a bad 4-4. They do have to settle their side down, get some key players back into that side. There's great stories to come out of that from both sides, Mark.
Hawthorn sit at 4-4. They still, as a top four team, they lose no fans last night. They regain Luke Hodges. Brian Lake is to come back into the side. And they are absolutely of huge chance to win the premiership this year. But they become not a huge chance. In fact, it becomes remote if they don't finish in the top four. And even if they finish in the top four, Fremantle and Sydney earn those top two spots, then they will have to win potentially a game at Subiaco against Fremantle.
Correct.
To get to the grand final. Now, I still think that they can go through the season and get that top four spot and even get maybe a second spot, but they can't afford any slip-ups now.
No, well, they're at round eight, Mark, and they've already lost the same amount.
That's right.
But I just watched last night and watched how they fought back.
I understand, but they've got games. Right, the next two games will not be an issue. They play Gold Coast in Tasmania and St Kilda at Etihad Stadium.
Okay.
Then they've got Adelaide at Adelaide Oval. It definitely should be a game that they handle, but again, they can't afford to be off their tucker that day.
No.
Home crowd gets involved. Things can happen at Adelaide Oval with Adelaide. Essendon at the G, I think they can handle. Collingwood at the G, they've shown a propensity to handle. But then they meet Fremantle in Tasmania. And Fremantle may see an opportunity to put a major rival.
They'll be okay.
There's Sydney at ANZ still to come.
They're back up there again.
Yeah. West Coast at Subiaco. These at Port Adelaide at Etihad. These are teams that would love to see them out of the top four. Port Adelaide and West Coast because they would covet a position. And there are, and they could really only afford to lose maybe one more game to be guaranteed of top four, I think.
Yeah.
Or maybe one or two more. So I'm just saying that they can't afford a crazy loss against Essendon at the G or Collingwood at the G. It's not that crazy. I mean, Collingwood at the G, there'll be a possibility, and they can't have a repeat of that loss, say, to GWS, which was not on the radar. That's all I'm saying.
Lake played, Mark. You mixed.
Oh, sorry.
You were talking about Spanger and...
Sorry. No, I was talking about Spanger, of course, yeah. And no doubt that the return of Luke Hodges as a spiritual leader to the side will make a difference. They're a team that got beaten on their merits last night. Sydney, I'm not making any excuses for their loss last night. Sydney, you can't avenge a grand final loss, but what you can do is set in motion a grand final campaign, and that was a great great way to do it. How about North Melbourne? They had plenty of players not make the trip across.
A lot of players not make the trip across. Brad Scott went right out and, you know, quite rightly said, and took offence to the questions, you know, you're underdone. He said, we have got players to come in and cover these players. And I know that is the party line, but, you know, losing Swallow, having Del Santo and Wells on long-term injuries, weight went off with an ankle, mate. That was as that great war movie. That's a bridge too far.
And at 90 percentage points, they've actually almost lost ground a game's worth in percentage points, because they're equal on 4-4 with Hawthorn, but they're 25% behind them in percentage.
Yeah. I'm not being critical here, but it's interesting. And he said the right thing. Everyone would say the same thing. If we focus on Fife, we'll forget about, you know, we're not going to focus on Fife. We're going to allocate a tag to him. No, it'll be a team, mate. That bloke's special, isn't he? He is 37 possessions. I think 12 clearances. 6'3.5".
He'd be very
13
short
and a half stone in the old. You know, he's a centre half back, a centre half forward.
He'd be a short price to win the Brownlow, would you say?
I would think so. And
I saw a bloke yesterday at Etihad Stadium that can absolutely win the Brownlow.
That won't go away. Is he the bloke that won it last year?
Matthew Prittis, across all...
Yeah.
The attractive statistics for Brownlow votes, possessions, contested possessions, clearances, is up on last year. Last year he averaged 27 touches a game. He's over 30 this year. They've won 6 out of 8 games. That midfield is still Prittis and the rest. Shuey, Gaff, Maston, they are...
How did Selwood go? Did they bring him in or did they leave him out at the last moment?
I don't think he was there. When you're at the ground, I've got to admit, now there's something I didn't even check up on. I do know that Hutchings didn't play. Sorry, it was Hutchings, I think, was a late withdrawal. Selwood did play.
Right.
They did have run with play with Selwood. It was Hutchings, another run with player, who was the late withdrawal. So Prittis, I know Fife is probably... could be anything at the moment, but Prittis would be plenty as well. So I wouldn't. There's a notion that he might have been best on ground in every game, Fife. Look, he is absolutely flying. But have a look at this in the Herald Sun. Nathan Fife, 18 votes. Matthew Prittis, 13 votes. Well clear of the next group. So,
and we know the umpires have a nice look at him.
Collingwood did what they had to do.
Yeah. The other boys, too many out, Mark. You know, they've Amira, Ablett, Swallow. That is A, B and C of their starting midfield. They've got Rory Thompson. They've got Stephen May out. Yes, they've been one of the stories of the year, no doubt, because of... but too many out and a very professional performance by Collingwood. Without Clokey, Elliot got 5, Pendlebury pushed forward.
Fasola might have got 3. Kept a place in the team for himself.
I had a good look at this in the second half. Yes. A really good performance by Collingwood, because it was game, even though the other mob aren't going that well and are undermanned, you just had to be on your game. You had to prepare mentally to play. And apart from a burst where Gold Coast kicked 4 in about 10 minutes just before into the second quarter, Collingwood steadied, and they didn't rely on Cloak. Jesse White kicked the ball well, you know, kicked some nice goals, kicked 3 goals, and was a constant target. And the back line of the Gold Coast were not able to cover the height and the variance. You know, they lost... Goldsack had to go back because the impressive Frost went off with a bad knee into the hamstring.
Yep.
I think he should be all right. That'll be... damn sore, I would imagine, but I can't see, unless he split the muscle, I can't see that being anything other than an inconvenience. And Goldsack went back to centre half back and did a fantastic job. But if Charlie Dixon was very, very good again.
Oh, that's good.
And he's going to be a terrific player when this side settles down, gets himself really fit. He's a very good key position forward, and had Brown really on his toes.
If you didn't see GWS Adelaide for 3 quarters, but you did see St Kilda West Coast, you don't worry, because for 3 quarters it was identical. GWS West Coast both got out to substantial leads. There might be timing differences here, but basically they both got out to 5 or 6 goal leads. They were then pegged back to within a goal by the St Kilda and Adelaide. Then both St Kilda and Adelaide suffered a couple of injuries. And the better team playing anyhow in West Coast and GWS regained the ascendancy and got out to a 6 or 7 goal break. The only difference was that GWS just queued in the rack a little bit. With 5 minutes to go or 6 minutes to go in either game, the scores were almost identical in terms of the difference. But the difference was that Adelaide scored a couple late and West Coast scored 3 late. So it blew out the final margins. But they were very similar games in the way the pendulum swung. And the big news for GWS is that these reports of Scully having turned a corner are correct. Mm. Ferocious tackler now.
Yeah.
You know, he's a big body hard tackler who's been taught a defensive side of his game. But when he gets the ball within 50 metres of goal, he can really set sail. So he's become a very effective, if not run with player, then close checking midfielder.
Finally, the interesting change of GWS is now, you know, Adelaide, we all had them as a good side under Phil Walsh. And like Taylor Walker, did he get 4? Betts got 3. Jenkins got a couple. Yep. So if you said that before the game, oh, they're going to be operating okay. They've gone through that phase, GWS, and stating the obvious, they are now having what you call regulation wins. That was regulation. Okay. Started favourite. And won the game.
And Spotless is a difficult place to play it.
Yeah, you mentioned that quite, yeah.
We saw them beat Sydney there in round one last year, and it hasn't become particularly easy to... That is a tough ground to play it. Teams, I guess they land in Sydney, they've got the trip out to West Sydney, a lot of players don't know what's ahead of them. And what's ahead of them is a very, very good team. We're going to take a break and then start our in-depth look at the inside football way of looking at games. And we start, of course, with last night's real war, a real finals type game in May. Why not start up now, Sydney and Hawthorne? You're after each other, you're at each other's throats. Yes, there's Freo, yes, there's others, but I think there's something special between Sydney and Hawthorne, and the Bloods and the May Blooms went at it last night, and sure, he'll tell you exactly what happened, how, why, and of course we don't need to say who. She was the Bloods.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 11:16 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555. And Epworth. Better. Inside Football. Hawthorne.
We're a happy team at home.
The Sydney Swans.
I'm really happy to be able to win the game. I mean, you've got to be able to find a way. And we kicked the last 3 goals of the game, which were important. There's a couple of things probably in the last 5 minutes there that, you know, they could have easily won it. And it was just went down to the wire. And we worked hard. We got out of the blocks well. They had their turn, as all good teams do. And we were able to withstand that and then kick those last 3 goals in that last quarter, which is so important.
Oh, I think we've all had a junior football coach that told us over the journey bad kicking is bad football, and we kicked 9 goals, 15. You know, even in the first quarter, you know, it looks like Swans have got tremendous ascendancy, but it's just simply because of goal kicking conversion. You know, by 5 minutes into the end of the second quarter, it's 1 goal, 6 to 6 goals, 1. They take their chances, we didn't take ours. So and then we had some chances to convert some opportunities late in the game that we would normally ice, and we didn't take them. So we lick our wounds and move on.
And so in what was a cracking game at the MCG in front of 63,319 engrossed fans, Sydney 11-7-73 had 6 less scoring shots than the vanquished Hawthorne, 9-15-69. There was, you know, when Gunston is missing set shots and kicking 1 goal, 3, then the fix is in. Because Hawthorne, one of their great strengths is having a forward line that boasts Roughead, who's a very accurate kick for goal. Gunston, who's better than accurate. He's deadly. And Luke Bruce, who goes tens of goals at a time without getting a behind. That's been his history. And we know that pressure creates, forces problems or forces unforced errors in kicking for goal. And as much as what was pointed to by Clarko was bad goal kicking, and it's not as simple as that, Shorey. It's for mine. I mean, you tell me if I'm wrong, but when the scoreboard reads three goals to nothing or two goals to nothing and Hawthorn have a shot at goal, it's a very important goal to be kicked. And there's pressure, the pressure that came to bear by the scoreboard ascendancy by Sydney started to show. It was not kicking for goal without consequence. It was kicking for goal to get our boys into the game. And tell me exactly how it played out, but I am loathe to look at 9:15 and say if they kicked straight, they would have won, even though at the end of the game, that's what would have happened.
Well, look, both sides had their chances. You know, Sydney kicked the last three goals of the game, but there was so much that played out. This could go for the whole 2 hours. This was intriguing, Mark. You know, people will focus on Bruce doesn't miss from 35 metres. You spoke about pressure, right? He went back. His eyes were wide.
That's right. But
you know, and to kick that goal. Very unfair focus on Rioli. If you saw the passage of play, he was travelling flat out. The handball was hit hard from close range and he didn't one grab it. But his performance, along with Mitchell, when they were five goals down to get them back into the game, people have short memories. He was sensational. His work rate was the best I've seen from Rioli. Yes, we've seen some magical cameos. He pushed, he marked, he embarrassed blokes around him. He was superb, and Mitchell was clearly beaten by McGlynn early, and then he just worked and worked, and McGlynn just couldn't go. He couldn't go anymore, and then there was a very good move from Longmore.
Now, surely, if somebody wants to point a finger, a Hawthorn supporter, even though I doubt they would at Rioli, or a commentator or an opposition supporter, then they are not being fair to Rioli because of the speed and the impact of the ball on his hands. Yeah. But hang on, Matthew Suckling had the ball in his hands and speared the ball for a Sydney turnover that resulted in a goal in that last quarter that can be criticised, I feel.
Well, what happened? There were three opportunities. The Rioli one I've spoken about, that's my opinion. Bruce kicks that 99% of the time, that shot. And Twitter lit up, Mark. You know, I go to Twitter when there's events and just get the public's perception. The theme was Rioli just dropped the World Cup, or Rioli just dropped second spot on the ladder. Not one mention of Matty Suckling's. Matty Suckling had to, if he kicked the ball, I'll say this, if he kicked the ball to the top of the goal square, Hawthorn would have won that game. He tried a
pinpoint
to I don't know who. The ball travelled 20 metres at most, speared onto a Sydney chest, and the commentators all at once said, they're out here, they're out here. The culmination of that was one of the two goals to McVeigh, yeah, isolated at the top of the goal square. Look, folks, we're not pinpointing Suckling, Rioli, because that game wasn't like that. It was a superb game, 30 points up Sydney, sharp with their hands, slick with their ball movement. They were on a really mission. It was nasty. There was plenty said out there, which makes me think there was plenty said grand final day, particularly when Hawthorn got on top, because they were after Lewis, they were after Mitchell, and they came out there really fired up. Goods was excellent early. He started on the wing. I tell you who's playing very well, Mark, and, you know, we just hope his brother gets a bit of a rub with the green. Reed played forward. He played wing. And he played back. He's becoming a very, very important player. And I thought, well, with Reed and Goods in the same side, does it create imbalance? Certainly didn't early. It might have later, because there's no doubt in my mind the pressure that Hawthorn brought to bear and the way they got back into the game really fatigued Sydney. And like most people, I thought Hawthorn had the run at the end of the game. McGlynn was shot. Hanbury was working hard. Longmore made a couple of great moves. He moved McVeigh forward and isolated him, and on Suckling, and they also got move McGlynn forward to try and get some crumbing power up there because he couldn't go with Mitchell, and they went Mitchell. So the young Mitchell went to the old Mitchell, and he got, I think he got three touches in the last quarter after Sam Mitchell had been absolutely superb in getting them back. The way Hawthorn do it was intriguing. They're five goals down. They put Roughhead and Gunston behind the ball and basically mark, without a whiteboard, they play three-quarter ground. So they put everyone in three-quarters of the ground of Sydney. Their tackling, they lifted their tackling. Their tackling went to it and they continually took the ball off Sydney and they got goals on the break. And all of a sudden, two or three in a row, and instead of being 30 down, you're in the mid-teens. You're 14 points down, you're 15 points down, and it's game on. They really did it superbly. You know, Roughhead is critical to this tactic. He goes behind the ball. He goes in the centre square. They do the same thing, but it's hard to handle. Burgoyne went into the centre square. He went in there. Mitchell goes back behind the ball when he's tagged heavily and faces the goal. So he doesn't go to as many stoppages. He plays across half-back. Whether he plays as a half-back or the seventh defender is irrelevant. He just goes back 30 metres mark, faces the play, and it makes it very difficult for the tagger to adjust to that. It's a lot easier to tag around stoppages when there's numbers, but when you've got to tag Mitchell when he's facing goal with a little bit of space, and he was superb. But Sydney, look... So many things to talk about.
Can I ask you, Hodge comes in next week. I thought Billy Hartung was unfortunate to be demoted to the substitute.
I think he
substitute.
Had 25 possessions the week before and very unlucky. Yeah.
And came on and had a definite impact in the last quarter in this game. Now, Hodge comes back next week. Who misses out?
Give me a list of the names. I would say Whitecross. I would say Jurea for Suckling. I don't think Clarkson can afford to... well, he's pretty ruthless, Clarko.
The only problem is that Whitecross and Duray weren't playing.
Whitecross didn't play. I meant Suckling, sorry.
Yeah. So I'm just saying...
We've got an SMS. We've got... is Suckling and Whitecross in Hawthorn's best 22? Well, Hodge is.
Hodge comes
and
in.
I think Duray, for his toughness, he's not as... Look, what's Silky with disposals if you're gonna shank kicks like that, Mark?
If Hodge comes in next week, somebody has to be dropped. It's not Mitchell, it's not Lewis, it's not Smith, it's not Rioli. It's not... These are midfielders. It's definitely not Shields. It's not Langford.
No.
It's not Hill.
No, Hill was good.
It's not Burgoyne. It's not... It's either Hartung or Suckling.
Correct. It won't be Hartung. I thought he gave him real life. And he was really tough, really hard at the contest. Adam Goods was, he was good. He was good. He was lively. There's no doubt about that. And he played wing. He played as a high half forward. And he also isolated them close to goal. So he had three positions. And that's been the issue for them. What is Goods' position? Well, he's gone back to that old role. The only thing he didn't do was go in the centre square. Shaun Makers could go out, Mark, off the SMS. But he kicked two.
But he was handy.
He kicked two goals. But once again, when he went back, they took him right back to the goal square. They isolated him back there.
But for structure, I mean, they're playing Gold Coast next week. It's not as vital that they get it absolutely pinpoint right. But structurally, he would come out for Spanger and somebody like that, a versatile, tall, up, forward and back. Let's go to a couple of calls. Mario calls in from Monturner. G'day, Mario.
Good morning, fellas. Look, with Suckling, I couldn't agree with you more. He's been a good player. He's a good player, but...
Good player, yeah.
He's very offensive, but his defensive is not very good at the best of times. Jurea, and most Hawthorn supporters would tell you they were upset Jurea is out. If you had to pick between Jurea and Suckling, I'd take Jurea every day of the week. You put him in, he'll get his own ball, he's tough at the ball, he tackles very hard, and he's proven that over the last couple of years. If he tackles, they feel he's tackling it.
But Mario,
With Suckling, when we're playing great, yeah, he looks great, but when the pressure's on, for some reason you'll find he's the first to falter. I think he does feel the pressure a lot more than others.
They isolated him very well. As soon as they got the match-up, McVeigh, Suckling, they took him right back to the goal square where he wasn't comfortable at all. Your point is not shared. I guess, by the match committee and particularly the senior coach, who has always picked Suckling before. They've played many games together, but if push comes to shove, as we saw on the weekend, he will drop Jurea, despite the qualities that you quite rightly pointed out. Tremendous courage, heart. So it only comes down to the fact that Hawthorn must believe, and you know better than I do, that Suckling's penetration with his kicking is more important to them than the courage and toughness and desperation of Jurea. So that's how they must see it.
Thanks a lot for the call. Most of the supporters that we're getting SMSs from, Hawthorn supporters, are suggesting it might be Suckling who misses out. If it was a choice between Suckling and Hartung, a lot of Hawthorn supporters are very bullish about Hartung, and as they should be. He's definitely shown something this year. Look, they're all good footballers. We're talking about the Hawthorn side here, and it's not easy to break into. I'm very interested in a player that has got a foothold in the competition this year, Shorey.
Yep.
Tom Mitchell has been good in the last month. How good was he against the sort of opposition he'll be playing? And I think he's got a spot in the team. Deep in September, if Sydney get that far. So this was a real test of Mitchell against what matters.
Yeah. Yes, I gave him a tick. Look, Langford and Parker was a great duel. Parker's come out with his mid-20s, but nothing as influential as he was, and I thought that was a really good duel. I thought Mitchell was good, but what he has taken the next step in his career, because what do we see him as? Parker in the middle, Kennedy in the middle, Jack in the middle. They tagged Jack very well. They kept going to him with Shield, which was interesting. And Langford had a close eye on Parker. Sort of left Mitchell as that third or fourth wheel in the midfield. He did well, but the significant move, Mark, was, you know, we don't know why he hasn't played for 2 years. He's had ankle injuries. He's come in, he's done well. But this looked to me, this is a different role for you. And he went to Mitchell. Mitchell's last quarter was only 3 touches. He was superb. He just destroyed McGlynn after McGlynn was clearly on top. And he initiated everything that got Hawthorn back into the game. And it was a good move. Was it a desperation move? Was it a move that a match committee sit in the coach's box and go, what are we going to do about Mitchell? He's got to get him back into the game. Who can we go with? And they went with young Mitchell. It was a great move.
So Confusing, but good.
He made 2 really good ones.
Mitchell on Mitchell.
Mitchell on Mitchell. And McVeigh Ford was, whether it was matchups, gut feeling, or he saw an opportunity to create something. Because with Hawthorn coming, one of the areas you would think you would need McVeigh is across halfback, marshalling, being the general across halfback, distributing the ball, being the calming influence. Rioli had to go, Shaw had to go to Rioli. Well, didn't matter who went to Rioli at one stage, the way he was playing. I just thought it was a couple of really good moves by Longmire.
Let's head to Scott in Essendon. Good morning to you, Scott.
Morning, boys. How are you?
We're well.
Just a quick one. Is there an issue with Hawthorn finishing off games? The third time this year, Essendon, GWS last night, where they've looked home late in the last quarter, 2 to 3 goals up and not one.
Let's be fair. Last night's game and the game against Essendon were moments in time when the siren went. 5 more seconds against Essendon, and was it Bruce who would have kicked that goal, running into the goal? So 3 more seconds, they would have won that game, and had Bruce done what he normally does and kicked straight, they would have won this game most likely. The fact is they didn't, but it's not as though they had a game in the balance, say with 5 minutes to go, and there was something that you could pinpoint as being an obvious reason why not only they lost those games, but something that needs addressing. Would you agree with that, Robert?
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
It's just come up, in 2-up parlance. It's come up odds 3 times in a row, and that's how the cookie has crumbled at this stage.
There's no doubt about that. Off the SMS, Mark, they're right. Birchall limped off, looked very sore. Lake came back on after getting a bad knock
on the knee.
So, Yeah, people are saying they will rest them. Who did you say they've got, Mark? Gold Coast.
Gold Coast and St Kilda, they can take it or leave it.
They've got to be a bit careful because they are 4-4. They're going to win the games. They're going to win the games of football. So, they're not going to play them. If they are injured, they're not going to push them out. They get Hodge back. So, yeah, it's still on, Mark, because both teams can take a lot away from that.
Hale and Segler still...
Didn't
have a huge impact on the game, but it was the ruckman didn't get involved.
A big Pikey threw his weight around. He was mixing it in, but I didn't think Harlan Segler influenced it going forward as much as they can.
So Sydney, if they just could have kept Mumford. Talk. If Hawthorn just could have kept Kennedy.
Oh, and can we give it? Sorry, I know the music's on. Well done, Frawley. I didn't think you could run with him all over the ground. And also, well done to Lance Franklin. He was aggressive. He was strong. He tackled hard. He never got frustrated. Oh, well, he did a little bit, but he kept his cool and he kept working for his team. So the points to Frawley, clearly, great effort. Well done to Franklin. Maintained composure when he knew that he wasn't having a great game.
Well done to both teams. You come with heavyweight billing. And unlike Pacquiao Mayweather, you delivered a few blows. Well done. A break, and when we come back, Collingwood were too good.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 1116 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555. And Epworth. Better. Inside Football, the Gold Coast Suns.
We are the Suns of the Gold Coast sky. We are one in the red gold.
Collingwood.
Good old Collingwood forever. They know how to
Gold Coast get some numbers back. Big fist there from Henry Shade. Now the crumb. Although they're at ground level, Elliott was one and he kicks a goal.
Gold Coast took momentum there for a little period in the second quarter, and we've probably been giving up runs of six, seven goals, so to keep it to four, even though we'd like to be able to chop that to one or two, was encouraging, because on field the leaders took control of it after the third and the fourth, and we were able to stabilise that. Last 5 or 6 minutes in the second quarter was an improvement area that we're looking for. It showed maturity within the group, and for us to be able to control the game, kick the last couple of goals going into half-time was an important part of the result.
That, of course, was Nathan Buckley following a comprehensive victory by his Magpies over Gold Coast, a depleted Gold Coast, a thus far this season demoralised Gold Coast, but maybe not so demoralised, even though the scoreboard says it, last night against the Magpies. There seems to be a spirit building there, though at the moment the troops are certainly thin on the ground. There was an absolute, for Gold Coast, lack of intensity and care in some of their losses up till now, and I just see the worm slightly turning for the Gold Coast despite the bad result. The 2012-132 victory over Gold Coast 9-9-63 was seen at Metricon by 16,440 well-camouflaged fans. They must sort of hide underneath the bowels of the ground because I didn't
red see... Red suits, aren't they? With
red
people,
suits.
Everyone's asked to wear a red coat.
Yes, that's right. They just... 16,440, there's the number.
They wear their colours, it merges in, Mark.
They are the numbers. Certainly, it was loud there. I'll tell you that. There was plenty of shrieking. And if you want to hear some loud, have a listen to 11:16 in the first quarter, GWS Adelaide. I think there were two naughty girls near the commentary box just yelling for no good reason. I'll get some audio of that later. But it was a game that Collingwood scored 20 goals in. Cloak scored one.
Yeah.
That's not a bad thing, I would have thought.
It's a very good thing.
There's a game that Varco, who's had his critics...
Best game for Collingwood?
Yeah, one of his best games ever. Heavy possession. I mean, he's had a couple. He's had a grand final that's memorable.
Bit of wing, bit of forward, bit of half back. So he's adding the pace that they hoped he would bring.
Yes.
Are we going to get a consistent for Salo, or was it, with the greatest respect to the young man, was it a upmarket VFL game? We know he can dominate, so we'll just reserve judgment. But it's three good goals, and he fitted in very nicely there. So I guess Collingwood supporters are waiting for him to do it on a bigger stage.
To return to do it on a bigger stage. We should not forget the Fasolo before he was kept out of the game for.
Didn't he get injured when he was going very well at halfback?
He'd moved to halfback, but he had certainly played some decent big game football for Solo, no question. But then the injuries came, and since then, this doesn't prove anything. We saw on Friday night wonderful confidence building performances for Caddy, for Murdoch, for Stanley. If they parlayed into something fantastic, we can look back and call it a springboard onto
something
good, better.
Mate. That is good.
Correct. So hopefully. Yeah. It gives Alex the confidence to return to his best form. Look, this game last year was a disaster for both sides. It marked the end of the season for two teams, which is very odd.
Collingwood's McCaffer tackle on Ablett?
Ablett out. They would only win one more game for the year. They performed miracles, though, to win that night. And the loss to Collingwood was the start of the rot that never stopped until the season was over. So it basically ended two teams' finals. Two teams went into that game with genuine finals aspirations, and both of them, in hindsight, but clearly lost their finals mojo on that night. In other words, this was a lose-lose game last year. They're very rare. I don't know if I'm gilding the lily for Gold Coast here, but I think it might have been a win with a capital W for Collingwood and a little W for Gold Coast in terms of endeavour.
Well, there's certainly I saw all of the second half when I got home from footy, and it was very, very interesting because listening to the radio and the boys called the game so well, they missed two horrendous shots. It's been a bit of a goal-kicking theme this morning. But they were right there, and then, as Buckley said, Collingwood's last 5 to 7 minutes just snuffed out any hope, and then they couldn't go in the second half. We do have to acknowledge Ablett and Thompson and May and O'Meara and these sort of blokes, so we acknowledge that. And then we move on to what was a dangerous game because of history. Charlie Dixon's, I guess, domination over Nathan Brown. Four goals, but he is a monster up there and really stretched the Collingwood defence, particularly when Frost went out. They prefer those two to work together. But I must say that Tyson Goldsake went back and played a terrific game to cover the loss of Frost. I don't know the full intricacies of the Beams to Brisbane deal, but Collingwood wouldn't be sending back Jack Crisp to Brisbane in a hurry, Mark.
He's not going back to Brisbane.
I know. He had 27. He went with Prestia. He's developing that very good ability to not only be, in inverted commas, a tagger, and that's probably a little bit. He is a very accountable player that can find the ball going the other way. He's got a beautiful balance between defence. He's got a nice kick on him. He held Prestia to 20. And when you look at the blokes that Gold Coast have out, obviously you're going to go to Prestia as the number one because he is the leader, the fighter, in and under player. And Crisp did a marvellous job there. Varco's form we've spoken about, Crisp, Elliott, they got really good service across the board. Side bottom, obviously, very important to them. Wasn't totally confident, I believe, in his tackling with his thumb. I'm not sure whether Steele's the greatest tackler of all time, but it's certainly a little bit of confidence there. And some of his ball handling, he was very, very careful with it. So it looked like they brought him back, not a week early, but he just needed the run, and he was very good, which meant that the great Port Melbourne man, son of the Williamstown Wharfie, Billy Swan, he just strolled around, Mark, for 36 because other people were able to absorb roles and allow him to play that sort of game. He was terrific, Swanee, and, of course, well led in 200 games by the captain, who played a beautifully balanced game between the middle of the ground and going forward. He kicked three. You've already alluded to the fact that Cloakey only got one, but I thought he was enthusiastic. When a player technically gets beaten or doesn't have a good game, and I spoke about Frawley and Franklin, you look at their body language, you look at the way they relate to other players, and I gave Cloakie a big tick. He was most enthusiastic about the work of his other players. He was always first over there, picking someone up, ruffling someone's hair, and that's a really good sign, and that's why I sort of highlighted Franklin in both of them. Well, Cloak and Franklin kicked one goal between them, and yet I thought their body language and their enthusiasm for the contest was great. And then up bobs Jesse White, because Cloakie did have that sort of game. I think it's very important when you know you're getting beaten, or it's not my day, or it's not coming to me, what can I do to make other people better? And there's no doubt Cloakie made White better. And that's a big tick for him.
Will not be in 3 weeks' time when all the most people have to go on as statistics and numbers. That will not be a factor in most people's analysis of Cloakie's current form. He had a miss against Gold Coast and et cetera. No. But let it be noted here on Inside Football on Sunday morning on this, the 24th of May at 10:54, that Robert Shaw gave him a tick, and he gave him a tick for good reason. I cannot be as generous with the Gold Coast bottom six. I was enthused by Charlie Dixon and players, obviously, that maybe playing to the best of their ability. Stanley and Hallahan cannot be questioned for endeavour. At the bottom end, they have some players that... It is surprising when you have a look at GWS and their inexhaustible collection of Richards in the midfield and all these star players they've got. Have a look at GWS's forward line. They've got Cameron, they've got McCarthy, and they've got Stewart. But they are not playing because of injury pattern this year, and Boyd has been traded, and Bruce was used as a backman before being traded as well. Their midfield just runs deep, deep, deep. And Gold Coast, I know they've got injuries, but we've seen a bit of Leslie, we've seen a bit of Sexton, we've seen a bit of Russell. We haven't seen a lot of Shade. He's more a key position type. We've seen Aaron Hall.
Maybe for the last time.
And none of them...
Rockets got him off the ground pretty quick,
Mark. Yeah, none of them do much to get your heart racing. We've seen Brandon Matera, and I think he needs a new club. He has really stagnated and become a kneeful player there when he looked... promising. He was the architect of their first win, was he not? Wasn't that in Adelaide?
Don't know.
They had a famous win in Adelaide and Brandon Matera was the main man. But not anymore. And of course, Andrew Raines should be credited for getting to a third club and might even get to a fourth like his father. But he's, I don't know who he's running with, but whoever he was running with would have enjoyed the experience. We're going to take a quick break. It just doesn't seem as vibrant to me anymore, Andrew Raines. I don't want to be unfair on the guy. He's crafted out a nice career and maybe just getting back to full fitness.
Who the Pies got next week, Mark? Just quickly, they are... Where are we? I'm scanning through. Oh, they're a very interesting game on Sunday afternoon.
Who is it?
Against the Kangaroos.
Oh, if you don't mind umpires, because the Kangaroos are going to have to bounce back like the marsupial for which they're named. Otherwise, they'll be hell to pay. We'll talk about North Freo after the news. When I come back, I'll tell you what else is happening post 11 o'clock on Inside Football, your full-on look on footy, here on 11:16 SEN every Sunday morning. Brothers and sisters out there for Gold Coast, that's not a surprise, but maybe the return of Steel Sidebottom and a couple of unusual suspects would put a smile on Nathan Buckley's dial, as well as the 4 points and the percentage.
On 11:16 SEN, we're first at the footy every Sunday morning.
From a tactical point of view, it was very smart, and you had very experienced players against two very inexperienced boys.
With full-on footy analysis.
Consistency and all that is fantastic, but at some time during a game, you have to stand up as a coach and say, I'm going to make this move. I'm going to change the course of the game from my position as a coach.
Welcome to Inside Football with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Burhome, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555.
Oh, thank McDonald Burhome. If you have legal questions and a possible case to be answered surrounding your employee or termination thereof, McDonald Burhome, your best bet. And our best bet every Sunday morning for the latest news that is fresh to print, even fresher than printed, fresher than off the internet, because it comes straight from The Source. That's John Ralph at the Herald Sun. And good morning to you, Ralphie.
Morning, Finey. Morning, Shorey.
Shorey, yes, he nods in, nods as he just gets his microphone up and running. But I'll take the first one, you the ball. Poser. And that is, what is the very, very latest with Mick Malthouse? Will he be at the helm for this now monumental task against Sydney next Friday night?
Well, everything the club said yesterday was that, yes, he would definitely coach them. There are no crisis meetings. The meeting that Stephen Trigg forecast in terms of clarifying exactly what was the intention of his Thursday press conference remarks, well, that supposedly has happened after the game. They're on the same page, according to all the people that you talk to. Now, all it takes is you know, Mick to actually come to them and say, look, guys, look, to be honest, I don't want to coach, and all of those things change. So all we can say right now is that Mick will coach on Sunday. Look, everyone knows what will eventually happen, even Mick himself, but I think they're very keen to try and get through to the break. They were hopeful of maybe allowing him to coach out of this situation just to give them some breathing space. I think we all realise that's not going to happen given the current form line. But, look, best case scenario, they get to the break and then they either say, Mick, you're done, or Mick says, I'm happy to coach out the season, knowing officially, publicly, I'm done. But right now, the guillotine that he's hanging, it doesn't look like the executioner has pulled the rope, so to speak.
That's an interesting way to kill somebody, with a rope and a guillotine.
Well,
are you going to hang him? Are you going to hang him or cut the head off? Doesn't matter.
Well, I assume that a guillotine has a rope or something that allows the blade to fall, or is it a switch? What is it? You're a great fan of modern history.
Yeah, I've never really thought about it.
It doesn't fall by itself, does it?
I don't know how a guillotine works. And you know what, Ralphie? I don't want to find out.
I can mix a metaphor, though. So, no.
You made the point. You made it, and you made it well. And that is that he is facing the noose. And unfortunately for Carlton, there seems to be a bit of a stalemate because of and maybe it's right, because of previous statements. Certainly nothing, anything before the break would be running wildly contrary to what the president and even Stephen Trigg had been publicly saying. So I think that's fair that we get to that point in time and then there'll be a break and they can take also the decision not in the public heat after losses. That is too emotional. I think that's a good call. Let's get on to other matters. And the Match Review panel will be looking at three very good footballers. Sam Mitchell on Tom Mitchell. How do you read it? Is there enough impact there? Is it a serious enough in terms of impact to even warrant?
Well, I think what we'll see him miss a week is medium-level force. If it's careless and medium impact, that means he gets 2 weeks down to one. But I think we probably would all feel like, you know, it's either insufficient force or low, and so that probably gets Sam Mitchell a fine.
$1,000.
Yeah, I think we can all talk about, thuggish acts or whatever it is. No one believes it was thuggish act. But by the same token, no one wants to feel like a player who is getting manhandled should be able to ram their forearm, let's not call it an elbow, into an opponent's head. So you'd be disappointed if the Match Review panel overlooked it altogether, but I reckon the $1,000 fine is probably appropriate as a bit of a tut-tut to Sam Mitchell.
We have a number of guillotine fans listening this morning, and apparently there's a bolt that goes through a hole. The removal of the bolt will then result on the guillotine falling. 'Tis a sharp cure, but a sore one to cure all ills, was the old guillotine. Now, Elliot Yeo on Jimmy Webster. And Yeo played a good game, but I think Yeo might be in a little bit of strife. Let me explain why I think he's in a bit of strife. It wasn't as clear in terms of at normal pace, and there wasn't as much of a delay as with the Jordan Lewis incident. So it's not to be compared to that. But if you go into a marking contest with a stiff swinging arm, now I don't know how you mark a ball like that, it's a reckless act. And you need to take, the consequences will fall in such a way that I think reckless, head high, medium to high contact, what, just a little bit less intentional than Lewis, or a little less, what are the choices? There's
Well, it could be careless or intentional, and it could be low, medium, high, or even severe. But look, if Lewis was three down to two and he got two down to one, you know, I don't think anyone would complain. He will be saying, "Hey, yo, Alan Richo, man, thanks a lot for that," because Richo cleared up some understanding in regards to Webster. He said that Webster was not concussed in that incident. It was a few minutes later where he came back and got some.
Oh, well, that's good. Oh no, that'll save him.
Yeah, so that might help him. But look, the only caveat is that we say to these players, you need to be precise, you need to not make mistakes. And then they whack someone in the head. And we know that they very rarely make mistakes. And so, you know, how do we judge a level of intent? Do we just say, well, look, Yo was clumsy? Well, they don't tend to be clumsy very often.
He wasn't clumsy for the rest of the afternoon. He was beautiful, beautiful footballer. Took a great mark in that last quarter. No, he's a good player, Yo. Yeah. I'm happy.
If you've got two down to one, you know, potential, if you got a fine.
$1,000. Let's book him in for another 1,000.
Okay. All right, we agree with that.
And definitely Jeremy Cameron's on 1,000 as well.
I really don't know about this one. Look, we try to provide clarity on a Sunday morning, but all three of these are line ball. Now, if you look at the incident again involving Kyle Chaney, now I know his coach Leon Cameron said he's a ball player. If you look at it, he ran past the bobbling ball. He had an opportunity to bend down and pick up the ball, and instead he knocked Kyle Chaney over. But he really only got him to the shoulder. Now, certainly it wasn't to the neck or the head. So that's where the tribunal will be thinking, what do we do? But look, it was a pretty ugly is the wrong word. It was a really unfortunate incident.
Could he say that he confused the top of Chaney's head with the Sharon?
Well, potentially, but the Sharon and the ginger hair of Chaney were not very close together.
They weren't.
So again, we'll let the match review panel do their thing. He'd be nervous, but their forward line is firing beautifully, and obviously GWS would hope that he's there along with the great McCarthy. I think we can call him the great McCarthy after a beautiful performance by both of those on yesterday.
Now, I'm expecting, is it Paul Cronin and maybe the late Ruben Pellerman's estate to tell Nick Riewoldt not to play? Because everybody from up in Brisbane seems to have some very good advice for Nick Riewoldt, but I think he'll be back next week.
Yeah, look, I think the only thing that would stop him from playing would be a surprising and adverse, you know, neurologist scan. He'll meet him next week. Now, as you say, everyone from the cheap seats has given him some advice. Nick wants to play. Kilda wants him to play. And at this stage, the medicos are saying, mate, we think you should play on. So we believe that will occur, as I say, unless there's something surprising that comes up. Sam Fisher won't. He tugged that right hamstring, which he has done, I think the experts are telling us, four times last year. Alan Richardson said that he'll be back in 2 to 3 weeks. We'd be surprised if he's back in a fortnight or 3 weeks. Look, that's a recurring hamstring. They'll give him the time he needs. So he's probably facing a month on the sidelines, which is really disappointing for a bloke who's done everything to get back and done the hard yards to rehabilitate that pesky hamstring.
Great concern from former Brisbane coach Lee Matthews for Nick Riewoldt's health and former Brisbane captain Jonathan Brown for Nick Riewoldt's health. Obviously, they didn't have as grave a concern for his health when they tried to double break his collarbone when he was injured actually on the field. So I understand what they're doing, but it's a long way away, and we're a long way away. They may be 100% correct, they may be 100% wrong.
Yeah, and everything Kilda has done is being cautious with concussed players. We saw Jack Loney effectively ruled him and Riewoldt out on Sunday morning. So, you know, it's not the kind of club that's rolling the dice. This is a club that's got the welfare of their great and their first-year players at heart. So I think we feel like both players are in good hands.
Now, Ralphie and Mark, you've got to be fair here, a swinging arm from similar to what he copped the week before, except higher. McVeigh was a swinging arm from Johnson, a swinging arm from McVeigh to Langford, was it? Just under the jaw, under the neck region. I don't think it constitutes, but you know, there's no mention of it in the papers or anything. It will be looked at.
Okay, I'll take your word for that. Well, I was flicking back mostly, obviously, on that game, but haven't seen that. So, the match review panel are pretty good. They put in all the incident notices.
Yeah.
You would assume that they will go through that.
They'll certainly look at that. Yep.
And now, just a few to wrap up with. A Corky for Frost, concussion for Laird, Pavlich's groin, and Jared Wade's foot. None of them are super serious. A week at the most across the board there.
Yep, yeah, you'd think that. Oh, Pavlich definitely plays. Apparently it was precautionary. Weight is, yeah, it's a flare-up, so you'd think with Brown also out, that's a problem given they play Collingwood. It might not be a problem that Jack Frost doesn't play with that corked hamstring, given the other two might not play as well. And Laird, I believe it's his second concussion. So you'd think that along the same lines as Brodie Smith, two concussions in 8 weeks, you definitely rest after Jake Lever whacked him, as I think... He unwittingly whacked one of the St Kilda
Jack players. Lone, he didn't. Lone, yeah. No, Jack Lone, he jumped into Lever, and Lever, that was one Lever that wasn't pulled because Lever just stood there and Jack Lone bounced off in the little fella.
I think you'd probably have a lever on a guillotine to sort of, you know, pull that bolt out, don't you?
Well, they reckon there's a rope that pulls the bolt out, so.
Yes.
You know what? I can see why we don't use the guillotine anymore. It's too busy.
And to be honest, I should apologise. Look, the dead man walking phrase, it was even used on the front page of the Herald Sun and in the Age. Look, I think Terry Wallace has been really strong when he was for the whatever you want to call it. You know, he said that's a really hard term. And so, look, I don't think we should use that. And to be honest, we probably shouldn't use the guillotine as much as we have some fun. So we should be inventive enough to just say, look, these guys are under the pump and they know what's happening. So I do apologise, Mick Malthouse.
Life will certainly go on for Mick. Whether he's coaching or not, he will be a in-demand football figure as long as he draws breath. So you're quite right. There's no cause for grave concern. Thanks a lot. Back to the next generation of Ralphs, John.
Thank you very much.
We can hear Ralphs in the background, running around. A little bit of Crown Bet news, and they are odds for today's games. Essendon $1.25, Brisbane $4.10. The line is 28.5 points. I give Brisbane and Bolters chance in this. Melbourne, $3.30. Western Bulldogs, $1.35. The Lions, 18.5. Port Adelaide, $1.33. Richmond, $3.40. Now, that is almost shortish for me for Richmond. Line, 21.5. So there must be a bit of an inkling that Richmond will do okay. Brownlow medal odds. Fife is into $2.25 to win the Brownlow. Prittis, $12.
Oh, Mark.
I like Fife. I mean, between them, there's something going on in the West. There's big-bodied, blonde, wavy, curly-haired midfielders can't be stopped. And that was North's problem last night. So let's take a break. And we know that after the game, Brad Scott said that they were monstered at the contest. This midfield of Fremantle is building a reputation for being too big, too strong, too physical for any club to handle. We'll find out why North didn't from Shorey last night, and I'll also ask Shorey whether they can.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 1116 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555. And Epworth. Better. Inside Football, Fremantle. North Melbourne.
So join in the chorus and sing it one and all. Join in.
Fremantle's attacking into the ground. Tap down Goldstein. Fight.
Oh.
Walters with the left. You heard it from Bill Allen, the grunts and groans. That is a Chisholm and Gaiman goal of the night.
Yeah, it was a strong performance. Yeah, so it showed we're hungry, we're working hard. A few things we come to improve upon, the 450 stoppages and bits and pieces. I thought we did that. So, look, I thought North never gave up. They fought on. They could have taken a few more opportunities in front of goal. And they worked really hard, but I thought we overused it at times, but we wanted to make them defend, and I thought we did that.
That was Ross Lyon. Didn't quite get to. He banked the 4 points and move on, but I'm sure that was somewhere in his discussion and his post-match. He loves banking. And at the moment, they bank them every week. 4 points as regularly as kids used to put money into their savings account through their passbook little thing that they kept in their pockets at school, because this is a weekly occurrence now. 4 points for Fremantle. Of course, the near upset of the apple cart was last week against the Doggies, and maybe it served to just remind everybody involved with Fremantle that nothing comes easy, because they certainly didn't this week take anything for granted or necessarily take the foot off the gas, though I suggest that after three goals in the first blink of an eye, it might not have ever been at 100% rev. In the end, 17-13-115, Fremantle defeated North Melbourne 5-12-42 in front of 35,836, mainly adoring Fremantle fans over in the west. It was a violet crumble that North Melbourne produced. They crumbled and it was violet here, violet there, violet everywhere, Shorey. What on earth do North Melbourne do? Yes, they had players out to psychologically mend the notion that they are, no matter what they produce this year, still not amongst the upper echelon.
No, they're not. And but they've got a quick... they've got to get back quickly, Mark. They've got to recover. They did a lot of chasing. They faced Collingwood on the Sunday, so they've got... it's not like a six-day break from travelling, so they've got a bit of time to get themselves ready. It'll be a very good coaching challenge for their coaching group to... get these boys back. I'm not sure who they got coming back into their side. Hope they have a little bit of luck with injury. But it was a clear definition between the absolute top, which Fremantle are at the moment, courtesy, and I haven't got the stats, but mate, they finish it in the first quarter, don't they? How many times have... some clubs have pegged them back. You look at what the Dogs did. But basically, their starts, you'd say, can they be beaten? Well... of course they can be beaten, but I've seen it nearly done before. You know, I sat in the coach's box for 21 weeks till Plough Wallace got hold of us in the second last round. I've seen it done, so I've seen you can be hungry. You can, if you're good enough, you can stay up. But Fremantle will only come undone when and if, and it's a big if, their forward pressure... look, their forward pressure takes as much mental capacity as it does physical. They're really well organised. Once the ball goes in there, it doesn't come out. The superb chasing of Ballantyne, Walters, Main in particular, these blokes put enormous... so when that's off, that's going to be the opportunity for a side to knock this team off. They've got... who have they got next week, Mark? They travel...
they've had a very tough draw. Fremantle. They've played a lot of good teams.
They've done a huge preseason in readiness for this. So you only assume, the way, you know, it's a different game now, you only assume that the time's going to come where a few injuries are going to kick in. They're older players. McFarlane has missed a week, but their old players are fit and up and about. Pab's got a groin.
They are 8-8.
They're
8-8. Next week.
8-stuff all, Mark.
They play another tough game, Adelaide, at Adelaide Oval.
Mm.
Then Richmond in Subiaco.
Yeah.
Gold Coast on the Gold Coast.
Yeah. Well,
a bye. Collingwood at Subiaco.
Bit of everything there, Mark.
Brisbane at Subiaco.
Well, they're going to keep going, aren't they? That's what you're saying.
Then they've got Hawthorn in Tassie. Carlton at Subiaco. Richmond in Melbourne. GWS in Subiaco. St Kilda in Melbourne. There's a lot of wins there that they just will not... muck up.
No, they won't, Mark. Now, well, so where does this come from? You know, we knew they were talented and they've been up and about for, they've been in the finals for, you know, 10 years without getting to the ultimate preliminary finals, grand finals. They've been pretty consistent for the last 10 years. Can they take it to the level? So what's happened to their team?
Lockie Neal has added, a welcome addition of class finishing and possession getting in the midfield. There are three players who played last year and have been regulars. In fact, Tendai Mazungu was an absolute fixture.
He's a very good player, and for some reason...
they've moved on from Tendai Mazungu. I don't know why. Because his ball usage is ragged. He's a running machine. He's an aerobic beast, and he was there when the whips are cracking all around the ground for 3 years or two... Three years under Ross Lyon, but I think Ross Lyon addressed the notion that his ball use is not good enough. And also he spends most of his aerobic time getting from contest to contest. He's not really a line breaker with the ball. So as they strive, I believe, for more direct play, for a better, in search of getting the ball from back line to forward line, transitioning and playing the sort of football in chains that teams do nowadays, I think Tendai Mazungu was replaceable.
Right. You've seen it with Clint Jones. We've seen it with Ryan Crowley. This has been his DNA. One player, one role, straight to him at the first bounce, and do not leave his side. Yep. You've seen Clint Jones do it for 150 games very effectively.
Yep.
We've seen Ryan Crowley do it very effectively. That has stopped. That has changed. And you named the boy because of the Crowley factor. Young Neil was a bit player, a very promising player, but also a sub. Had the vest a number of times and the interchange a number of times. That has been a significant move from the Lion mindset. You've seen it?
Maybe forced upon him, but now embraced by him.
Forced, but embraced. You've mentioned Mazungu.
Because he was preparing, he was grooming Clancy Pearce for said
Why
role.
Why does Clancy Pearce... Well,
but he doesn't use him in that role unless...
But he's replaced Mazungu, hasn't he?
Correct.
So there's just been some... So why does Clancy Pearce...
Because he's a more driving kick. He's a more powerful person.
And he's got
in
himself
traffic.
Very, very fit. They've got a forward line.
He's got rid of that big caboose and he can move.
They've got a very flexible forward line. They do have big targets if they want to. They've got Pavlich and they've got Main and they throw Clark and Sandilands down there. So they're fine for height, very good for height, but it's the dynamics of their small men at ground level. They can push Hill forward and they've got obviously the two lock-ins in Walters. So it's still going to come down to the Johnson-McFarlane factor over the course of 28 games,
I understand.
27 games.
I've got two theories as to why they're 8-0 and clearly an improved outfit. One is... Without Mazungu, Crowley and Dawson in the team, they have become a more potent lineup.
Stop there. Are you saying forced on him? What if they were available, Mark?
Well, I think Dawson might have played in the waffle yesterday.
If Dawson, Crowley and Mazungu's been available, Crowley hasn't, Dawson's been injured. So it's only 33.5% of availability. Which way would he have gone? We'll never know. Or is this a grand plan, a grand scheme?
From Nathan in Perth, Tendai is playing really well in the waffle, but the standards needed to break into this Freo lineup has gone up a notch, and that's exactly it. It's just a demand of more with the ball. So there's a theory that thrust upon him with Dawson's injury, with the problems faced by Ryan Crowley, and an upgrade on Mazungu has been a better output. So that could be one reason why they've won 8 from 8. There is another theory. The Fife just wins games for him. He's just playing better than last year, and he's a monster, and he's just bloody good, and he's too good, and it's not fair, and Fife's just killing him.
Come down, yeah.
I reckon there might be a little from column A and column B there. Fife is really, he's imposing himself on the game where it matters, in the middle, up forward. All these, it's interesting how all these players like Blitzavs and Stanley and that. There are forwards that have tantalised their coaches at 6'3" to be thrown into the midfield. And they don't really work because I don't think they have a midfielder's sensibility forever. Blitzavs is a really interesting case study, but at the moment, and he's brilliant, don't get me wrong, he's a brilliant type, but he's not an inside mid. This bloke is an inside mid first, that then is a key forward second. He's a beast. He is a beast, Fife, without being not a vicious player, without being an overly physical player. He's the most physical player in the competition just because he goes for the ball so hard.
That's the problem with him, Mark. He's so hard at the footy.
But he goes for it so hard. he's a powerful, physical, dangerous footballer. He probably doesn't have a notion in his body but you're big. You're playing with little kids. He's a bigger boy. I'd check his birth certificate. I don't think he should be in the under-14s, this kid, Fife. I don't know why he's allowed to run around with the other kids. I think he's too old.
Just off the website. Gee, I reckon he's bigger than that, Mark. 190 centimetres, what's that?
6'3".
It's got him only at 88 kilos here.
I'm 88 kilos. Now, I'm a bit podgy, but
this guy's
rock solid. He's just a beauty. And the other thing about him is he loves taking on... He has a bit of a go. He's not lairish, but he pictures himself doing difficult things on a football field. He's not totally beholding to the rank and file sort of now the drilled kick, run, handball stuff. He's got a touch of, dare I say, the Indigenous players' flair for trying things that are a bit special, which is great because even some of our best midfielders have become drilled down into team ethos and don't play with a lot of flair, even though they're wonderful players. There's so much to do for the team that they're not doing fancy stuff. He does a bit of fancy stuff as well, so you've got to love him. North Melbourne.
Just quickly, look, Brad Scott alluded to schoolboy errors. How much can that be put down to the pressure? A lot can be put down to the pressure of the way Fremantle play. You know, Lindsay Thomas, four possessions, well held by Lee Spur. Ibbotson was gave away height and weight to Waite. Waite had to go off with injury in the second quarter, but Ibbotson did a good job there. Scotty Thompson was fantastic on Pavlich with one goal one. It was a great battle in the ruck with Goldstein and Sandlands. The big fella got forward and kicked one from 50. Sandlands, he is, for a bloke so big, he's technically a very, very good kick, and that's why they have always tried to get him forward, but he just doesn't hold those marks strongly enough like some of the other big blokes. And it's a matter for North, just very quickly, Mark. Get back to Melbourne. You're playing a team in your ballpark. Fremantle aren't. It's quite as simple as that. Hopefully they get some injuries back because for Collingwood and North Melbourne next week is a critical game where both sides are pretty level. Should be a great game of footy with both teams expecting to get the 4 points.
As we sit here this morning, my crystal ball has fogged up and it's not pretty because there is every chance that there'll only be two Victorian teams playing in the finals this year. Think about it. Count Queensland out and every other team from every other state would consider themselves a real finals chance. A break, and when we come back, we'll talk about one of those teams, West Coast, and how they came to town, took the 4 points home, and played some pretty nice football in the process. Their opponents again showed something, St Kilda, but not for long enough. Can be stopped by any side, because at the moment they are rampant. Fremantle, purple reigns supreme over the Kangaroos when we come back.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 1116 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555. And Epworth. Better. Inside Football. St Kilda.
When the Saints go marching in. Oh, when the Saints go marching in.
The West Coast Eagles.
Really pleased that we got the win. Obviously disappointed in the second quarter. But we knew they wouldn't go away, the Saints. And we scouted probably their spirit a little bit. That they're a team that they're young and exciting. And they put some real pressure on us in that second quarter. And we didn't stand up to it.
Didn't execute with it with the ball, over handball at times against you know, their defensive setup. Just dropped some pretty easy marks when we're going inside 50 at times, and we clearly have to make the most of opportunities. Didn't quite get our defence set, you know, they were able to rebound a little bit too aggressively for us. But I'm sure you're alluding to the fact that we were incredibly strong with our tackle pressure and our inside defence in the second quarter, and that was pleasing that the guys were able to turn around what was a disappointing start to the game.
And that was Alan Richardson post-match. West Coast Eagles came to town and they got the job done. 20 goals, 11, 131 to St Kilda, 12, 6, 78. It blew out at the end, but much like the Adelaide game the week before, halfway through that last quarter, there was about a 26-point, 30-point margin that was not insurmountable, given that St Kilda had quickly got back into the game in the second quarter, and of course what they did to the Bulldogs, St Kilda have a lot of speed, a lot of foot skill, and sometimes it's not executing perfectly, but when they get on a bit of a roll, they can actually score quite quickly. They have a good spearhead in Josh Bruce. Membry proved an able target farther up the field. Hickey less effective this week, but West Coast were on the rebound even more precise, in fact, far more precise. Now, the first quarter, St Kilda was walking around naive. Naive to Pritis's danger, naive to the power of the West Coast Eagles' outside players if given too much space, naive to their forward line, and naive to Jeremy McGovern's marking ability if you just dob the ball up into the forward line, into his back line. And they, like a naive tourist walking in the bad part of town in some American city, they got mugged good and proper in that first quarter.
Mark,
but they learned a bit from it.
Well, have they learned a bit?
Even in a quarter, they learned a bit.
Yeah, but they gave the Western Bulldogs in a remarkable recovery. But 9 goals down. They're basically 7 goals down again. So that's a combined total of 16 goals down early in games.
But they jumped Collingwood. They jumped Adelaide.
They did jump Collingwood, yeah. And
they got Adelaide early.
Yeah, I suppose. Listen.
They're not consistent.
No. So what you do with St Kilda, you try and look at the window of where they're at and what they're capable of doing. And they pegged that back to 7 points in the second quarter, as you know. You were there. And they did it on the back of some superb defensive pressure and their 36 tackles. And I'm not dancing on anyone's grave because I'm just stating fact. They had more tackles in the second quarter than Carlton had for the whole game. So if you want a window of where one club's rebuild is based on, and they're not good enough to do it. They're not good enough to, and their young bodies aren't good enough to sustain that. And they need another 40 games into them all. No Webster, no Fisher lost, no Delaney, no Riewoldt. The door's open to multiple goal kickers. You know, Hill bobs up with 4. Kennedy was terrific. And the two medium paces, well, medium-sized players in Yeo and Cripps also chipped in with 3. So they couldn't cover the holes. But what you try and look at is, okay, let's take that window there. We've seen what we've done against the Dogs. Let's take that window there against the West Coast Eagles. Now, you on the SMS last week, you were criticised because you refuse at the moment to acknowledge what the West Coast Eagles are doing. What you saw live there yesterday, and I didn't see it, are you prepared to say, well, they're all right? I know you said they're all right, but you feel that they have still got some enormous challenges ahead to prove that they're a top four side, or even a top eight side.
What did you see in Eagles? What Adam Simpson has done, he has an eternal credit to it. This is a marvellous effort. They have some major shortcomings, West Coast. Rather than try and address those shortcomings when he probably doesn't have the fix there at the moment, he's accentuating their assets. Their assets are getting the ball to the outside, getting the ball into a forward line that even without Darling is dangerous, using Cripps, using Hill, using Lacroix as a wide running. They've got a lot of options when they go forward with guys that love to kick a goal and can kick a goal. Hill, Cripps and Lacroix are goal kickers. Kennedy is a hard-working forward. They've got a midfield that relies absolutely on the extraction by Pritis to some others.
Stop there. Sorry to apologise. No Weller to Prizes. If that's your summation of the Eagles, so good, Shuey and Gaff and Lacroix outside, not saying they're outside play, but they get it to the outside and they run it so well. Cripps, yo. You've got to stop the extractor, don't they? And
How do you stop an extractor, though?
Well, we've already discussed you've got a good ruckman.
You've got a good ruckman like Nat Nui. You put it down the throat of prison at Pritis.
Yeah.
The only way you can stop him is with dynamite.
It's the interesting discussion on who to tag, isn't it?
Right.
And they're letting the Watsons and the Pritises and the Swallows and the inside
they're
muscle.
They're too inside. They're
yes. Now, that's a very good point, and they're trying to stop the gaffes. And the next person
has to be put off his tucker because those guys are too strong.
But do you believe he should have had Weller on Pritis?
Just to knock him over, just to bump him or something. I don't know. Could we not get physical on a player anymore? Could we not just bowl him over if you really wanted to win a game? If it was a final, there is no way you'd let him do what he did.
Well, maybe they should watch the Sydney Hawthorn game. They were bowling him over, I tell you.
In the final, I'm saying, when they get to the finals, he will get absolutely ploughed over. Somebody will just go through him because you can't let the bloke. He's brilliant, but it was played he was played a bit at arm's length. In the second quarter, St Kilda, a young St Kilda, with Jack Sinclair and, you know, McKenzie, unlikely players, and Little Montagna, and were coming at West Coast, and they have got a major problem, West Coast. When things are going against them, their ruckman is feeble. I'm sorry. He got two votes in the Herald Sun yesterday. Now, either Bruce Matthews has shares in a Nick Natanui doll company, or he is besotted by the same theory, the same
mystery. That got him all Australian that year.
That got him $1 million a year in a contract. I mean, he took his standard number of marks around the ground yesterday. Do you know how many marks he took for the day? Zero.
Zero.
Zero. He didn't take a mark. Zero. He goes for them, but he just doesn't take them anymore.
Hit-outs?
He had 15 effective hit-outs compared to Longa's 12, and he had about 10 more hit-outs than Longa. He didn't kick a goal. He did some very nice things, don't get me wrong.
What were they?
When he knocks the ball down to himself and he picks it up and kicks it.
The highlight reel you're talking about.
There was the highlight reel was lovely, but there is no way he was second best on ground. I mean, Nick Natanui... Bruce Matthews isn't 11 years old. He doesn't need to buy a pair of onesies with Nick Natanui's face on it. I mean, he's a marketing tool, and in the highlight reel, he's very exciting. He's a superhero-type footballer, and if we ever had to make the Avengers out of AFL footballers, I'm sure he'll get a run. But he didn't deserve two votes yesterday. Best on ground was Prittis, and second best was McGovern, this unfashionable...
What is he, Mark?
Well, he was bred out of...
Unfashionable. Why? Because he's got a wide bum and
he was bred out of an AFL footballer. Because Andrew McGovern was unfashionable,
yeah.
It's almost bad breeding. Like, you're better off being bred by somebody who didn't play footy because people go, oh, Andrew McGovern, he's a bit slow, he's a bit big caboose, you know. Anyhow, he ended up in the Waffle, this bloke. And interesting, St Kilda went and got a player from the Waffle from, I think, the same team. How you could watch Tom Lee and not like McGovern is beyond me anyhow. So... McGovern is a beauty.
Was McGovern Claremont?
Claremont or Subi? Claremont.
I'm not sure. Lee was Claremont?
Yeah, then I think McGovern was Claremont.
If they both had the same game.
I'm pretty sure they played for the same team. I'll have a look.
Oh, no, they'll tell us off the SMS.
Everything's dropped there. But
Look,
they were good West Coast. He's a beauty, Prittis. Lacroix. Didn't have a heap of it, but I think he's a ripping player. And they've got a new player. And where did I sit yesterday? Middle of 50 of his relatives. And he got plenty of it, and he used it beautifully. And Duggan's family, I know they were happy.
St. Pat's College.
I know they were happy with him, and they were lovely. They were great people. You'd never hear heard a bigger cheer for interchanges.
So is he in, Mark?
He was good.
The young fella from St. Pat's.
He was really good, Duggan.
Well done.
Highly rated, though, wasn't he?
Yes, he was, Mark.
Very nice user of the ball.
Yeah.
So, well done.
We played...
Wellingham was all right.
A little story. Yep. We played... My school team played St. Pat's. Howard Clark, you know, they won five in a row. And he said to me, West Coast have got one of our boys. Keep an eye on him. And that's Duggan. So I followed him closely, got into the side, and I don't think he's going out in a hurry.
Now, Nick Natanui, I've been told, have a look at his contested possessions.
That's very important, mate.
He had 14 touches.
Yes.
5 kicks, 9 handballs, 10 contested, 4 uncontested. Now, that is a good effort. There's no question to win 10. Yep. But he won 10 contested possessions. He didn't take a mark. He didn't kick a goal. I'm not saying he played terribly. Not at all. Not at all. He was the best big man on the ground. He was not the second best player on the ground. He just wasn't. But Nick Nat is a bit of a, he's a bit of an excitement machine and people love him. He's got that very distinctive look of dreadlocks and excitement. But quite frankly, he was not second best on the ground. Off we are to the news. To the ad break. A quick look at GWS Adelaide.
Yeah, McGovern was Claremont. Remarkable story, and we'll say this respectfully. It was a fat, chubby kid in his teams. Horrible at football, now amazing. So there would be a game there where McGovern and Lee played in the same Waffle senior game
absolutely.
For the recruiters.
Yeah, and the then coach Scott Watters made a beeline for Tommy Lee because he liked what he saw and maybe coached against when he was at Subiaco. But
We're not being rude. That's a fair assessment from I'm saying that's, a bloke that's watched McGovern as a young kid.
And I'm not being rude to Waters. Probably at the time, you had to take Lee over McGovern. But now, this boy McGovern is
but that's
a beauty.
Funny. Anonymous. Horrible at footy. That's a that's extraordinary assessment. But I like honest assessment.
Off the SMS, I'm not being silly, guys. Has anyone effective Nick Nat? He calls him Nick Nat. Nick Nat. My daughter calls him Nick Naknui. Has anybody checked whether he needs contact lenses because he's so bad at marking? Well, he could afford them. He gets $1 million a year. He could buy a Specsavers, let alone a pair of glasses from there. A break, and when we come back, he could be the first footballer with a monocle.
Come on, we've got 4 minutes for the Giants.
I'd rather talk about Nick Naknui wearing a monocle because he loves being different. He's different. He's great.
Oh, dear.
Ish. A break, and when we come back... GWS versus Adelaide.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 1116 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555. And Epworth. Better.
Big day at the G today. They go pink for Ladies' Day, Breast Cancer Awareness, Andrew Marr, Nathan Thompson, Call the Action with Scotty Lucas, Rowan Connolly, pre-game. And then we go to Port Adelaide versus Richmond at the Adelaide Oval. We'll be there early for the toss to see Richmond kick into the wind, maybe. Matt Granlund and David Schwartz, Daryl Wakeland special comments. Now, very quickly, the three biggest points from GWS Adelaide. We spoke about it earlier.
Midfield, Shield 34, Treloar 35, Ward Scully Griffin, outstanding. They did it against a forward line where Walker kicked 4, Betts kicked 3 and Jenkins kicked 2. They were plus 46 points in the third quarter and they kicked the ball at 80% efficiency in the second quarter, which would absolutely drive the new coach mad. Very poor at stoppages.
Philip Wallace.
Walshy wouldn't like it. They just strolled out of stoppages. End of story.
And you know what that means? Draconian methods used by Philip Walsh. They'll be up early, they'll have an extra training session, and I wouldn't be surprised, one more performance like that, they'll be on their knees doing the Tuddenham commando crawl around Adelaide Oval with bricks on their back. He's old-fashioned, Walshy.